Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado.
I'm your host, Eric Singular, sitting alongside the Chief Operating Officer of Gateway Proven Strategies, CC Zach. And today, we are joined by President and CEO of Key Splash Creative, Susan Gunelius. Susan, thank you for being here with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And I should note that you are also a contributor to Cannabis Media, where you have written a number of articles, some of which we're going to dive into here in a little bit more depth on the Legitimizing Cannabis series. But if you would, tell us a little bit about your background and how you forayed into the cannabis industry.
Sure. I've spent my entire career in marketing, studied it in college. Out of college, started working in corporate America for divisions of AT&T, Household International, always in the marketing field. In 2004, I gave birth to triplets, and going back to corporate America wasn't really conducive to my life at that point. So about a year or so later, I just had the itch to get back into marketing again and started my own marketing communications company. So I've been doing that ever since. It's been, well over 15 years now, I guess, that I've been working with Key Splash Creative. And I got into the cannabis industry about 6 years or so ago. And to be honest with you, it was through Cannabis Media. The founder of that company, Larry Schwartz, was a client of mine through another company that he founded prior to Cannabis Media. And as he was creating this new company, he knew that he needed help with marketing communications, reached out to me. I said, yes, I am definitely an advocate of the industry. I'd love to help you out. And so that was my first cannabis industry client, and now I have a bunch in all different aspects of the industry. I don't only work with cannabis clients, but it's certainly a nice, sizable chunk of my business.
Susan, what really interests me about seeking you out was an article that you wrote, I believe it was in 2019, regarding legitimizing cannabis. And as I come from big pharmaceutical as well as advertising conglomerate backgrounds, I've seen the need for there to be work streams almost on how to help create an acceptance and in this industry where legitimization can bring a growth opportunity and hopefully federal recognition of what this plant can do in so many different aspects. So tell me a little bit about what inspired you to write that article.
That particular article was a series that I wrote actually for Cannabis Media about, and I write for a lot of publications about the cannabis industry. Cannabis Media is actually just one of them, but I did a series for them of articles, and that was part of it. And it was all about professionalism in the industry and elevating the industry and really making it something that politicians, regulators, and the masses would start to see as a real legitimate industry rather than what it had been known as during all of these decades of the war on drugs. For me, legitimizing the industry, and remember, I'm a marketer, so for me, it really is like repositioning the industry. It's like repositioning the brand. It's changing people's perceptions, just like you would change your perception of any brand, and then building in people's minds a new way to think about it. And we need to do that. We need data. We need evidence backing what's so amazing about this plant. We need communication. We need leadership. It all starts at the top and trickles down. So together, when you have data proving that this is a good thing, not the bad thing it's been thought of for all of these years, and you combine it with communication, education, then eventually the perceptions will change.
So with all of that work that you did to write the article, where did you get the knowledge to create, as I recall, you had behavioral changes in there, and you talked about different verbs or lingo that should be changed. How did you get to the point, and what research did you do to write the article and the suggestions that you put in that piece?
Well, I pretty much I thought about it in my own head. What does this industry need? And it needs standards that we can point to and say, hey, we're not just kind of making this up along. We have standards. We have best practices that we're following. And then another part of it that really I had in my mind was the fact that more and more people in the business of cannabis had started moving away from using the word marijuana, and we had started moving toward using the word cannabis because of the stigmas attached with the word marijuana. So what other aspects of terminology can we change just in the way that we speak about this industry that could help elevate it and legitimize it and separate it from the negative connotations? So those were kind of the two core parts of the particular article that you're talking about. So as I started thinking, all right, well, what are the best practices in the cannabis industry to help everyone be more professional, to help change people's perceptions? I happened to stumble across the National Cannabis Industry Association's Code of Conduct for its members. And I thought, well, this is a great place for cannabis businesses to start in creating their own written best practices, their own codes of conduct. And NCIA's Code of Conduct is really very simple. It's a compliance with relevant laws, focusing on health and safety, respecting others, integrity and open communication. It's nothing earth-shattering, but it's things that every business and every professional in the industry should be focusing on to do our part to help legitimize the industry.
Well, Susan, I come from a background in communications and marketing, and I really want to highlight something you just said, something that's in the article, which is just the power of language. You talk about how the industry has tried to move away from the term marijuana towards the term cannabis. Of course, we have our own thoughts about that here, being part of a law firm, and really thinking about the language from a legal distinction. But I do just want to highlight, you know, in your article, you talk about terms like pothead and stoner. These perceptions around cannabis, these things that perhaps stigmatize the plant for such a long time, are changing, but there's so much power in the language by which we talk about these things. I think it's just an incredibly important point to note in conjunction with the other great code of conduct things you have in here. I love that you shout out the National Cannabis Industry Association. They're a great, great friend of ours. Always a good resource, but just for me, I really feel a lot of power in words and just using the right words, changing the perception. And then when you think about it, also, any company that has cannabis or hemp or marijuana in the name could testify to how difficult it is to get access to banking, all of these other things, just because of the words that they're using and what they're associated with. So I just think the point needed to be highlighted. I think I've done so. So kicking it over to you, Cece.
Well, and I just want to point out that from my perspective, I love trying to coin marijuana as a psychoactive effect of the product. Now, that's a lot of a mouthful versus using the marijuana term. But we do need to differentiate the fact that, you know, cannabis is really the umbrella name, and marijuana is the psychoactive component to it, and then hemp is the other piece of that. And, you know, we just need to take more time and try and figure that out. And Susan, so the question goes back to you. Is there a way, and maybe the NCIA is the community to do this, is there a way to self-police or to help the industry do these things so that the politicians and the regulation and hopefully the masses start to see this movement towards more legitimate behavior?
There are really two ways to accomplish that, in my opinion. And it starts with education. And that's not just educating medical marijuana patients and recreational consumers. It's educating doctors and health professionals. It's educating the business people who are in this industry or working with the industry through ancillary businesses. It's educating regulators and politicians. And again, it goes back partially to the data and the evidence. We need research and the proof. Even when you make a purchase decision, you want proof and you want to feel confident that you're making the right decision. Changing perceptions in the cannabis industry about this plant, it works the same way. People need proof that they're making decisions about it that they can feel confident about. So we need to start by educating people about what the plant is, what it's capable of, the data to prove it, that we're not just saying it is, but that it actually really truly does work. Evidence-based case studies. We need to ensure that everybody understands that this product has two very distinct uses, one recreational and one medical, and they're both okay, but people need to understand what the data is backing why it's okay to have these things in our marketplace. I always say, oh, and then the second part of that before I jump to my next thought is leading by example. So we can't, it trickles down, the culture trickles down, and it starts at the top, whether that's at a business, whether that's with our politicians. And we need to educate and then allow our leadership to communicate. And I think what's interesting is some states like Illinois and Massachusetts, they have responsible vendor training that's required for their cannabis dispensary agents. So you can't work at a dispensary if you haven't gone through responsible vendor training. And that's just a perfect example of a way to educate people, in this case, within the industry.
And it's interesting that you say that it starts at the top. And you did mention politician and regulators, but you also mentioned business. I'd love your perception on where you think big business is as it relates to the facts around cannabis as a potential brand for portfolios, the cannabis portfolio, or from a sustainability perspective, where hemp could provide a plant-based alternative in so many different ways and fuels and grain and fiber. So I'm wondering if you have any opinions on that.
And this is purely a personal opinion right now, but hemp, you mentioned, it's shocking to me that there's not already just massive, broad conversations going around about how incredible hemp is and everything that we could be using it for and the huge opportunity that it offers. What is the bottleneck to these conversations happening on a broad scale? I'm not sure. I haven't researched it. I'm assuming that it probably still goes to the fact that hemp comes from the same plant that marijuana with THC comes from. So that's my assumption, that they're still too closely associated, and there again is where we need education and communication. And whose responsibility is it to get that education and communication out there? It's everybody's. It's every person who's involved in the industry. It's all of our responsibilities to help people understand why hemp and cannabis should be a part of our legal marketplace. Of course, now hemp is with lots of restrictions still, but cannabis certainly at the federal level should be legalized.
Preach, Susan, preach.
Yeah. I love it. You go, girl.
Where to even begin?
Well, I got one. I'm just going to jump in. As I mentioned earlier, Gateway Proven Strategies is a consulting firm that I'm working with, and I've had the opportunity to work with a handful of Fortune 500 companies that could benefit from the fuel and the fiber side of things. And I just am really kind of mesmerized by the lack of understanding of what the facts are as it relates to processing hemp. And, you know, I was talking to a textile company whose name will not be mentioned, and their perception was that they were using the same amount of water to process cotton for their products as they would for hemp. And I learned, you know, very quickly that, you know, the 50% of the water that's used in cotton is needed for hemp, as well as a few other things. And there was just such a lack of factual information about hemp. And the recognition that hemp, it's my understanding that hemp is the one of the plants that removes the toxins, you know, one of the leading plants that can remove toxins from the earth. And there was no mention of that in their thought process as it relates to, you know, bettering Mother Earth at the same time. And these are heads of innovation of global Fortune 500 companies. And there's a few other examples I'd give, but...
It's shocking, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I always wait all the time. I think to myself, who's it going to be? Who's the company? What's the brand that's going to come out and own this marketplace? Because it's waiting. It's open. It's waiting for some brand to come and own it. And, you know, being the pioneer brand is a very, very powerful position, and it's wide open.
Well, and in response to your questions a moment ago about what is it going to take, why are more people not on the hemp bandwagon, this is what I would say. Even though there is no dominant brand right now in the space, there are brands out there that are selling hemp clothing. So for everybody out there, buy a hemp t-shirt. If you love it, great. Tell somebody else that you're wearing a hemp t-shirt. If you hate it, that's fine too. But we have to really create the demand. You know, you were saying about the processing bottleneck, or what is the bottleneck? The more demand that we can show for these products, and the demand should come from a place of sustainability, to your point, Cece, but the consumer demand is really going to drive investment. It's going to drive everything that's needed, all the ingredients in really standing up a hempified world, if you will. Buy a CBD product, buy some hemp paper, put it in your printer. If you don't like how it comes out, that's okay. But all these things are out there. The brands are not, they're not huge yet, but there are people out there who have been first movers who have created these products. And I think it really is, if we want to see a hemp take a bigger spot in our world, we have to kind of show the companies that. We do that, obviously, with the power of our dollar, our spending power. I just encourage everybody to go out there and buy something from hemp. If you don't like it, you know, there's no loss there, but I don't know.
Well, I have a vision that all of our consumer product goods companies out there start changing their petroleum-based packaging to plant-based packaging. I'm a little biased with hemp, but I just don't see why these CPG companies aren't taking a stand today about what is needed over the next 2 to 5 years to transform the petroleum-based packaging to plant-based. And I'm very passionate about that because I believe that hemp can solve a lot of the issues from a wide variety of economic, societal, and humanitarian. Whether it's here in the United States, which I hope would happen sooner rather than later, and starting to see, you know, more hemp farms that are producing legitimized hemp where we can capitalize on U.S. farms, but, you know, are just sourcing from other parts of the world sooner rather than later. I know the bottlenecks are around R&D, and how quickly that they can go. But that also, there's another bottleneck around processing the plant. And I just wish that even the big companies like John Deere would take more of an interest in how can they produce processing equipment that is financially viable for farmers to use and process more hemp faster. And again, I'd love the U.S. to be the leader in all of this.
You've struck a real chord here, Susan. I don't know if you can tell or not. We're very passionate about this subject matter. But Susan, you know, on this topic of legitimizing cannabis, which is, of course, the theme of this series, do you have any parting thoughts for us, any message that you would like to send to business owners, operators in this industry? What would help what would help get us one step closer to legitimization?
Well, I think we need to remember that part of legitimization will be challenging as long as the black market is allowed to thrive. So the more that we can do to convince our politicians and our regulators to reduce the taxes that businesses are required to pay in the industry, to reduce the compliance expenses, to offer banking to these businesses, all of these roadblocks and challenges that businesses operating in the industry, not to mention patients and consumers who would like to buy it legally, but can't access it either because what they want isn't legal in their state or their healthcare provider won't give them a recommendation for medical marijuana. Whatever the barrier is, there are so many barriers in this industry that cause expenses to trickle down to the consumer where the prices end up being so high and the process to obtain it is so cumbersome that they turn to the black market. So we really need to focus on choosing politicians, talking to them and writing them, calling them, and everyone doing their part to try to get them to support the industry so that we can challenge the black market in a more effective way. So with that said, what else do we need? Well, I've talked a lot about education, which is truly so important. Certainly elevating the professionalism of the industry, reducing stigmas by using the right words. For employees, we always hear that recommendation, dress for the role you want, not the role you have. Well, I would say in this instance, speak for the role you want, not for the one you have. Because it really does affect the overall perception of the industry, how every employee acts. And then from the business perspective, really start focusing on collecting data and making necessary changes. Track customer service and quality of customer experiences. Identify problems, solve them as quickly as you can. Remove the misperceptions and the stigmas with good business practices and positive customer experiences.
And Susan, with all that said, I'm a passionate person around education, and quite frankly, it's been, you know, a little bit of the business that we've had recently with big companies. If you can spread the word about how everyone should just learn one fact about cannabis, like Eric had asked for us to buy one hemp article to try and bring into our daily life, if you can continue to spread that word about people just learning the facts about cannabis, I know I'd be so grateful, and you would help legitimize at one more day at a time.
Absolutely.
Well, and I would encourage all of our listeners, Susan, you create so much resourceful content, whether it's SEO, just great marketing advice. We thank you for everything that you do in this industry to help further legitimize the cannabis industry. Thank you for coming on and joining us today on the Hoban Minute, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.